Then you said the fault was yours, and you really were to blame. 'Twas as if to close the doors and to hide away in shame. Brother, you know you can't run away and hide. It's that you don't want to see her cry. Is that why you won't go and say goodbye?
What song should we use for this book?
That's a good question. Because I didn't really feel like this book had a super cohesive, like, theme, necessarily.
It did kind of just really rest on the, like, I hate being mean to animals. Like, that's kind of like...
Like, we know this. We know that Cassie is, like, the... Which is too bad, because I do feel like it... Obviously, it's been a hot minute since we had a Cassie book. And I like Cassie books.
This one has
a very Cassie, like, arc, but it's not... I don't know. I thought it was underdeveloped.
Well, at the same time, I think it's hard because a lot of the focus of the book has been running as an undercurrent throughout the whole series. And there were certain things, because it's been an undercurrent the whole time and sort of always there, there were elements of it that could be developed more, and there were sort of, like, this book was the opportunity to do that, I guess. But then at the same time, it's hard because it has been a thing the whole time. So how do you make this, like, new or interesting? And they use the morphing cube to illuminate that, but mostly it's just sad.
I yellingly texted you when I started reading it, because I didn't remember a lot about it. And then about 3 pages in, I was like, oh, this book. That's the thing that happens. Because it is really sad, and it's weird, and it's troubling, like it is.
It is troubling.
But at the same time, it didn't really land, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Let's explain to the good people of Earth what is going on in this book, if they haven't reread it with us and would like a little memory jog. So Cassie is in her barn, minding her own business, tending to some sort of creature, I forget which one, and Eric visits her, that's a thing, right? That's how this starts? Mm-hmm. I read this in 2 pieces, so...
Eric just, like, bolts in and is like, oh shit, guys.
Well, there's a helicopter circling, right? Like, it's immediate...
Yeah.
The stakes in this book are pretty intense, I will say that, and maybe that's why that they didn't have, like, a lot of time to make this, like, a true, like, treatise on something, because, like, there is no time for treatises. We are running. Eric shows up and's like, hey, we have a problem. Those helicopters, they're hunting down the blue morphing cube, which... Why do they even need that at this point? Like, it's just a liability. They're not going to give the morphing power to anybody else. Like, I don't know why they can't just, like, time capsule this shit. Like, jettison it into space or something. Like, give it to somebody to take it very far away from here. Or, like, give it to the Chi to, like, deactivate for, like, a while. Like, power it down.
Yeah. I would have given it to the Chi, who could probably figure out how to, like, make it dormant,
right?
Or something. Not destroy it necessarily, because that would be a mistake. I mean, it's a huge weapon. You don't necessarily want to not have it. But Cassie doesn't need to be keeping it on her property. Like, that makes her a giant target. And it has since, 12 books ago?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, because, I mean, at that point, I forgot that it was there, hidden on the farm. But if you think about it, then, yeah, presumably the Yerks would have been looking for it.
Right.
The whole time, because it would give them a massive amount of power to have.
Exactly. Which I guess means that this is a ripe, you know, story to use for this book. But also it did feel, as an audience member, I'm sort of like, why do we even have this lever? Why is this even here? Like, why? Why?
Plus, like, as you said, like, the stakes are high, but they're the kind of stakes where you can feel the manipulation because, at that point, of course, it's like it's a ticking clock book. They're running. They're on the run. They have to keep it moving because the Yerks can track morphing energy and they're trying to not let the blue box fall into their hands. And so, yeah, it's like a car chase book, basically, continuously, which is a little bit stressful.
It's like a Michael Bay book.
To read. Yeah, it is. This is like the Smash Bang action film book.
Yeah, and
previously
we gave it to
we
Patsy.
Had like the Under the Sea book was Journey to Atlantis, and then we had like a kind of an X-Files book, and now we have the Michael Bay book.
Mm.
And so I guess your mileage may vary on whether you find that kind of stressful to read. I kind of do, especially since I thought that the moral question is more interesting.
Yeah.
Yes, of course, I don't want the Yurks to have the blue box, but I would rather talk about what happens when non-sentient creatures get morphing power. That's, like, way more interesting.
Yes. Agreed. And, well, and it's a Cassie book, so, like, I don't think I want my car chase book to be a Cassie book.
No, Marco book.
Yeah.
He would know how to do it right.
Yeah, it's true. He would. He would. Cassie might be last. Cassie might be the exact last for a car chase book.
We've talked about this before. Like, a lot of the books have kind of, like, a lead-in to where, like, oh, there's something going on at the outset, but it's, like, sort of low stakes and it's goofy and maybe the kids shouldn't be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And this doesn't have that. Eric just shows up and is like, we need to leave now. Like, we're leaving. This is us out the door.
Yeah.
And so Cassie doesn't, like, have a choice. Like, she doesn't choose the car chase. The car chase chooses her.
Yes, which is compelling. Like, that is... That, I mean, that is a way to do a thing, and it is a good way to do that thing. Yeah, but this with Cassie and with such a, like, moral question at the center of it, like, it is, like, a huge dissonance in pacing to be, like, gotta keep going. And I guess they do create tension in the idea that, like, Cassie doesn't have time to stop and... dwell on, like, these moral questions. Like, she's gotta keep just, like, teaching this buffalo how to morph and keep running.
The other side of this book that is not the Michael Bay side is this is a Good Place episode. I was reading it after on a Friday on my day off after having watched The Good Place, because that's what I do on Fridays, and I was going, oh, fuck. Because it is. I mean, this
it's a trolley
is,
problem.
She's having a cheaty moment. And I think all of us can probably relate to that, because I don't know about you, dear listeners, and whether you saw the Twitter meme of, like, which two Good Place characters are you? But 99% of the people that I know said cheaty and someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So, like,
cheaty
I was
Janet.
Reading this and going, this is like the ethical question book, and it's really troubling.
It's very
and
troubling.
What would Chidi / Cassie do?
And, well, no one... Correct me if I'm wrong, but there was never really a fleshed-out conversation about it. It was mostly, like, Cassie having qualms and everyone being like, sorry, gotta kill it. Like...
Yeah, it was sort of like a... Everyone else was, like, had their foregone conclusion of how she would react, which... I guess it's fair, because at this point, yeah, okay, Cassie gets to be the moral compass character, and she always wants to have hard conversations about, like, the ethics of morphing and sentience and, you know, human life versus other types of life. But that doesn't mean that you get to just, like, not talk about it.
Mm-hmm. I feel like Tobias is always, and because, yeah, Tobias is usually a voice that goes with Cassie's, and not necessarily the same opinion, but in their animal sort of moral compass, like, I feel like Tobias is usually with, it's usually Rachel and Marco being shrewd and not necessarily empathetic and seeing what needs to be done. And then Cassie and Tobias saying, like, well, what, like, should be done? Which they even reference in this book when Cassie is protecting she's got the cube and then she drops it to save Tobias and then Jake yells at her. And then they rearrange the situation, and Rachel's like, yeah, like, you do the right thing, I do the necessary thing. Like, don't you get it? Which, it's, of course, I'm, like, looking for, like, bitterness. I'm like, oh, is your tone bitter? Like, is this an opportunity to, like, for me to make it about Rachel? But this is, like, this is the thing with Cassie and with Rachel, with the whole gang. Like, it's, we know to expect this, and then I guess the question is, should it always roll out this way because that's who these characters are, or does the author need to find new ways to keep it fresh because, you know, is it boring to have the same conversation where everybody's landing more or less in the same camp every time?
I didn't remember how it ended, and so that was interesting. as I was going along and what I thought was going to happen based on the fact that it felt like we'd had these conversations already and done a little bit better of a job with them. But then that wasn't what happened. I was like, oh, right. Of course, like they'll like teach you how to morph a whale or something and everything will be fine, which is not what happens. It's usually like, I mean, that's like that seems to be the cure for morphing issues is like trap it in some kind of morph that is like, smart, basically. That's like, that you would be happy living as.
Right.
Because the poor buffalo. Right. We should probably explain the buffalo.
We should explain the buffalo. I haven't explained. Sorry, everybody. So there's the buffalo. Basically, we didn't even really say it. So the Helmicrons invented that, like, morph detector. Like, it can detect morphing energy, and the Yurks have it now. And so they were just choppering around the whole area, like, tracking morphing energy, which really sucks because, like, the Animorphs can't do it. They're being chased. That's why this is a Michael Bay book. And so Cassie has the cube, and anything that touches the cube gets the power to morph. And so there's this cape buffalo at the zoo, at the gardens, that touches the morphing cube and also touches Chapman. And so now this buffalo has the power to morph Chapman and can't really control it. So then they have this, like, mutant human buffalo who doesn't understand what's happening to it, that, like, is in a position of, like, suffering. And then they try to leave it, and Cassie doesn't want to, but it's, you know, it's easier to not deal with it than to deal with it. And then Axe points out that the buffalo saw Cassie morph, and if it becomes a human and the Yurks get a hold of it and infest it, then, like, the whole jig is up. So that's a problem. So that, like, is an increased stakes. There's so much stress in this book.
Very stressful.
This buffalo is like a liability. And this is the only book series in all of human history where you can utter the phrase, this buffalo is a liability. And that's not even the reality of it, which is this, like, mutant buffalo is a liability.
There's, like, 15 different ways in which this is bad for the buffalo and for the Animorphs. And, yeah, like, there's not a way of fixing it.
Mm-hmm.
As I finished and was, like, frowning at my bedroom, because I was like, well, what would I have done? Like, all things considered, like, what could you do? And I did keep coming back to, like, trap it in some kind of morph, but it would probably be difficult to do that with, like, one of their go-tos, like a blue whale. You can't force something to morph. For one thing, it's hard to get a hold of a blue whale on a moment's notice. There's that. And then, you know, getting a buffalo to acquire a blue whale would probably be kind of difficult. But then anything that you could reasonably get a hold of, like a grasshopper that you could control, probably it wouldn't work. Like, I guess what happens is what has to happen.
Yeah.
But there's just so many avenues, like,
well, in the end,
it's the kind of concept that is, like, really, really Animorphsy and is really good and interesting and juicy, but was maybe too big for this kind of book or this size of book.
Yeah, or the pacing issue, the fact that there isn't time to really delve into these issues. I feel like there was an underlying theme of, like, instinct and choice, like things that you do without really choosing based on instinct, and then things that you choose using, like, a higher human thinking, I guess. Because none of the animals that acquire the ability to morph had any choice in it, and then don't have any choice in their fate. And then in the end, like, the Animorphs are presented with all of these difficult choices, and in the end, it's a deus ex machina multiple times over. The buffalo is destroyed by a helicopter, by a Draken beam, and the helicopter is destroyed by a seagull that gets sucked into its blades. And then, nightmare alert, in the middle of this, an ant acquires the ability to morph and then acquires Cassie. And so then there's this, like, Aunt Cassie, like Cassie is a human, but that also has like pincer, like it's the stuff of nightmares, and it attacks Cassie, and then the buffalo.
Because ants are belligerent, as anybody who's met an ant knows.
True.
And buffalo are also apparently really belligerent.
Well, and so the buffalo by this point has like a loyalty to Cassie, and it's a herd animal, and so the buffalo attacks the ant and kills the ant, which is another Deus Ex Machina. Like, all of the dangers in this episode are truly nightmarish and all go away through some kind of like chaotic, grotesque twist of fate.
Normally I would be bothered by that. I wasn't as much in this case because of, I guess, the larger themes. And because by that, at least by the time the horrible Buffalo Chapman and Aunt Cassie have their showdown, like, the buffalo is established as, like, following her and recognizing her, and they've like, interacted, and even though she's not really supposed to, she, like, kind of teaches it how to morph in order to try to take care of it, and it's really messed up. It's, like, this is like, a weird horror film. It's, like, there's a Michael Bay film happening, and there's a really kind of messed up Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode.
Happening.
And it's like, I like both of those things, but maybe not at the same time.
It's a lot at the same time.
And so yeah, by the time that all the things fall into place that like have to fall into place, I wasn't reading them going, oh well, okay, that gets them out of that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess because of like what you were saying about instinct being kind of like the underlying thread.
Mm. Or is this
the
like...
The animals in these cases are acting the way that the animals would.
Mm-hmm.
And it ties into, like, especially in the case of the buffalo, since we've seen how it is with Cassie previously, like, it makes a horrible kind of sense. Awful kind of sense.
Yeah.
The thing that you have to set aside is, in my opinion, the morphing power. Because I was not under the impression that you could just touch the box and then ta-da.
Yeah.
Like and especially as far as like acquiring morphs goes, I thought that there was some level of will involved, like intent. Like you can't just be like petting your cat and then no, like you have to focus on it.
Yeah.
Like you have to be aware of what you're doing.
Yeah.
And obviously an ant does not know what's happening. A buffalo does not know what's happening. So that was like, that's the thing that you have to, like, get over in order to experience the rest of the book.
That is a very good point. And I think it aligns as well, like, the concept of, like, I'm going to go full Ian Malcolm, maybe 50% Ian Malcolm at this point, and, like, the chaos theory. It's, like, the way that, and sort of going back to the instinct and control thing, and I think these are the topics that are touched on throughout Animorphs in smaller ways, because it's a book series called Animorphs, and animals are the vehicle, are the weapon that these kids are using to, you know, stave off an alien infestation. And the idea that, like, nature is chaotic and life is chaotic and so many things, and like you said, the things that were kind of Deus Ex Machina work as a way in this book, because everything is out of their control, like everything from the problem to the solutions to the obstacles and the stakes in the middle, like nothing is in these kids' control, and that is unfortunately realistic, especially when you're dealing with animals and you know, aliens, and apparently the stupid blue cube.
Yeah, there needs to be, like, some kind of a containment unit for that thing.
Mm-hmm.
I have to think that the Andalites wouldn't have been so dumb as to be like, yeah, you just touch it and it's like a virus, like, suddenly you have morphing power. Like, they wouldn't have done that. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
In my opinion, not as an expert.
No, you're right.
On alien technology by any stretch.
We don't hear from Axe at any point about it in the book either. Like, at no point is Axe like, oh yeah, like, let me talk about the morphing cube, which maybe would be a retread. Maybe he's already talked about it because we have dealt with the morphing cube before and maybe I just don't remember. But it does seem like with this Andalite technology being the crux of this book that Axe would, like, that would come up
Like, don't let anything touch it.
That, yes,
while you're
that.
Carrying it around on this car chase, like, don't,
yeah.
don't like, rub it against things that are
yeah.
alive.
Yeah, that. Or that, like, Marco would point that out with some sort of snarky comment and, like, be like, hey, Axe, like, I thought that the almighty Andalites had better, like, technology sense than this. And then Axe would get, like, huffy about it. And, like that seemed to be something that you would think should happen. But you know, I guess you don't want to draw attention to the fact that, like, the premise on which this entire thing hinges is, like, maybe a little flimsy.
Yeah, that's the whole, I mean, it's one that obviously you have to get past in order for the whole book to happen.
Yes.
So I'm not going to harp on it too much, but I do think that that's probably not how the morphing power works.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I mean, if it is, that's definitely a bug, not a feature. That's like, no.
Yeah.
I mean, it has been established that, like, the Andalite homeworld only has, like, 3 species of bird. And so they probably weren't anticipating the morphing power ever getting to a planet like Earth that is overstuffed, well, not really, with life.
Mm.
Lots of our life is dying. We'd rather it stopped.
Mm-hmm.
But still, more birds
yes,
here.
More than 3 birds.
Maybe they don't have ants on the Andalite homeworld. Maybe
not.
They don't have
probably
lots of creepy crawlies. I mean, if you're out in nature, so many things are going to crawl on the morphing cube.
Mm-hmm. You cannot take it camping.
It was on a farm! Like, so many things I already have.
Oh, no.
And
yeah,
yet somehow they didn't, you know, pop out of like, cows in the farmyard and stuff.
Yeah, this is a hole. Yeah, it does. It is, and we've talked about the idea that as we go further and further into the series, the books kind of have to be self-contained one-offs, or else the risk is that you move the story too far forward and you can't sustain it, like, you know, the fight against the Yurks or against the larger ultimate invasion. So that's how we get, you know, underwater taxidermy books and, I don't know. And you could argue that it's a book series. Every book is going to be a one-off. That's how book series works. Book series work. But yeah.
It does seem like it's been a while since we had, like, a myth arc book. You know, because the comparison, the easy comparison is always, like, Buffy or X-Files. Where, like, there's Monster of the Week episodes and there's Myth Arc episodes.
Yeah.
And it seems like most of the best books usually are the Myth Arc-y ones that have some big... like, the one Blossom with Marco and his mother. Like, not Visser, but the one... I think has a cockroach on the front.
Yeah.
The one where he spends the whole book trying to kill her.
Yes.
Like, that's a classic for a lot of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
One is that it's super personal for him, and it also has, like, ramifications for the galactic struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this one is interesting, and you can kind of see where it's concerning if, you know, the Yurks get a hold of the blue box.
Mm-hmm.
But mainly it's just kind of disturbing.
Yeah. When Aunt Cassie attacks regular Cassie... And, like, in the end, when she mentions that, all of the Animorphs make light of it. They're instantly, Rachel makes the joke about, like, Aunt, A-U-N-T. And, like, immediately, like, there is no time from anybody else spent, like, dwelling on, like, how disturbing that whole thing is. And that's something else that we talked about. There was no real conversation with Cassie about this. Cassie felt really isolated in this book. It was her and the buffalo, and that was it. She has, like, one scene with Tobias that's really logistical.
The rest of them are always off from her.
Yeah.
Like, trying to get the larger situation under control.
Yeah.
And it seems like when she does interact with them, it is either logistical or it's, like, somebody telling her what she needs to do about the buffalo in that case.
Rude.
Kind of heavy.
Yeah, this whole thing is very heavy for one person, for one character to bear. And because, like, listen, Cassie, yes, is the most sensitive of them, but all of them would be freaked the fark out about all of the things that happened to Cassie in this episode. Like, there's no way that anyone would just be like, oh, like, that's fine. Like, an ant version of me just tried to, like, eat my face with its pincher. Like, there's not, like, no.
Even, like, the Buffalo stuff, like, everybody was pretty focused on the fact that it was, like, that it was their assistant principal that had accidentally been acquired, which, okay, yeah, like, that's kind of, I mean, obviously it's horrifying and it's kind of funny, but, like, guys, the bigger picture, like, please.
Yeah.
I'm with Cassie on this one. Let's talk about the horrible ethics.
Yeah.
I don't know. So that, yeah, it felt kind of splintered, I guess, since she wasn't with them, with the larger group. And since when she was, their attitudes were kind of odd.
Yeah. It did feel a little out of balance, I guess.
I'm not sure anyone learned anything in this book.
No, that's, yeah, I would agree with that. Because again, it's just it's just chaos. Life dealt them a series of shitty hands, and they narrowly escaped, and that was it. And they didn't have any real choice. They did try, and they tried plans, but then they got derailed, and then they tried something new, and they got derailed, and in the end, like, that's what happened. Is Cassie? This is not the first time that she has morphed a whale from a high altitude to like crush something. Like, right? Like, this is not the first time that she's morphed whale in midair.
Yeah, I mean, they usually do go for the anvil in those scenarios. That's a terrible position to occupy in a group. Like, oh yeah, you've got the biggest morph, we're going to drop you.
Especially on a helicopter, that just does not seem... The blades are on the top, like, that's the point of impact.
At the rotors, like, you don't have that much blubber.
No.
Like, there's not enough insulation there.
Mm-mm.
I feel like this book is, like, the inverse of... the cow book or the horse book, one of the ungulates, which makes sense because the buffalo is also an ungulate. But one of those like contained, and those two are wacky. That's the Andalite toilet and then like the mind control drug. They're like ultimately pointless, but those two are like kind of like wacky and nobody gets hurt and the stakes feel like they're high, but they're ultimately super, super low.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is like, the stakes really are kind of high. And everything is kind of wacky and totally out of their control, and nothing goes according to, like, the various plans. But it's also really depressing.
Mm-hmm. And troubling. Like.
And troubling.
Yeah. We got some Jake and Cassie, like, romance, sort of. Kind of. Not really.
Your friends making fun of you is a classic romantic trope, so. Well, take it.
Jake made fun of Marco a lot in this book, and I really enjoyed that. Like...
It's good when the turntables, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He piled on. Because, like, normally it's just Rachel. And this time, like, Jake piled on. And even, like, Axe was able to kind of get in there a little bit. Yeah, I appreciated that. Yeah, is there anything else about this book? Or is this just a real short one? Because they didn't really present a lot of content.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like... Most of the Cassie stuff was done better in the Butterfly book.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this does have the morphing ethicality theme.
Mm-hmm.
But, and it's interesting. Like, yeah, there's nothing that's not questionable about a non-human or non-borderline sentient animal acquiring... another animal, in this case a human,
mm-hmm.
and morphing it spontaneously. Like, what happens if it's trapped in morph and becomes a human? What kind of responsibility? There's the big thing for Cassie is, like, how is she responsible for this?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, to what extent is she allowed to, like, abandon the buffalo to whatever is going to happen to it in the wild? Is it her fault if it gets captured and tortured because the Yorks think it's an Andalite? Like, all of those things are, like, really interesting, but they're not really delved into.
Mm-mm. There was the one conversation where Cassie sort of says, like, you know, it has human DNA now. Like, it has human DNA. And Rachel sort of, like, so? Like, and then Axe is like, I have human DNA. Like,
for some reason, they just let him get away with that. I'm like, you are already an intelligent species. Like, that, this is not answering the question, sir.
No.
In my opinion.
No, you're... No.
That was cheating.
Well, that's... Because that's the thing, is that they're... The buffalo doesn't know what's happening. The ant doesn't know what's happening, like you said before. Like, they're innocent bystanders that have no choice and no control over the situation, that have, like, a really difficult fallout that they also cannot control. Like, and it's not Cassie's fault what happened to them, but she's the closest thing to a responsible party that can do something to make it better for them. And what exactly is that something? Is it killing them in a humane way? Is it finding a better, like, a morph for them to become a Nothlet? Is it, like, what is it? What does that mean? Does it mean, like, keeping them on the farm and, like, just keeping an eye on them and be like, don't morph? Like, and it does suck that no one really has
a really large spray bottle.
Yeah, and, like, no one... No
every
one...
time you see Chapman's face pop up.
You stop that. No, and it does suck that no one has a conversation with her about it. And it does suck that it doesn't feel like she's listened to. Because her questions are valid. And just because she is the soft one in the group doesn't mean that she's the weak one in the group. Or the one that, like, shouldn't have a say because she's going to slow everything down and question everything that they do. Like, and sometimes Cassie falls into that role and other characters get really frustrated with her because her deliberation means hesitation and, like, they often don't have time. She really is the cheaty.
She's the cheaty.
She's the cheaty.
I don't think she's as indecisive.
No.
She's, I mean, this book aside, usually she's a little bit, usually she has an instinct of what, you know, what the correct answer is, mm-hmm. rather than 82 minutes for a hat.
Yes.
But, I mean, in terms of the only person who's, like, philosophizing, it's probably her, or, like, maybe Tobias.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I did like that they let her do, and which, again, if we had had more time or if it had been a different scope in this book, I think it would have been good. But the scene where she accidentally teaches her how to talk.
Mm.
Accidentally. And I say it with air quotes because we don't know. And it's intentionally vague as to, like, whether she meant to do that and she's trying to help the buffalo, like, fend for itself if it's morphed to something that has more brain capacity than it's used to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the other animorphs are like, no, this is a bad thing that has happened because you're basically, like, you're encouraging it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it was sort of like, you're not helping it. Like, you think that you're helping it, but you're not helping it, which is an interesting, again, like, defining, like, what does it mean?
True.
What does it mean to help it? Like, how do you help this creature? And that's not an easy question.
I feel like the obvious ethical question, and I think that this is what Rachel thought and why Axe, like, says what he does. The obvious one being, like, well, now that it can turn into a human, like, is the responsibility toward it, like, the responsibility toward a human? Like, have the rules change because we're not supposed to be killing humans or harming humans?
Mm-hmm.
That's not what interests me. No offense to humanity. I am one of us. I'm allowed to say that. I just think all the other ethical questions are way more interesting. So.
Yeah, well, that's sort of what it's been laced through all this time is, like, oh, we don't morph humans. We don't, you know, hurt humans. Like, humans, there's a line of separation between humans and animals, or else it wouldn't be so novel that these humans can morph animals. But it's also true that, I mean, Cassie sees animals, like, you know, that the line, there isn't such a stark line between humans and animals. Like, just ask Tobias. Which is why he should have been a bigger voice in this book. And you know, Cassie's position as, like, the tree hugger, animal hospital, And the fact that every damn book, they morph a new animal and understand something about its brain and its instincts and the way it operates, and animals are different. And I don't know, I think drawing such a stark line between animals and humans is not really what the series is has done and kind of does.
Scientifically, it would be interesting to see, you know, how the what the buffalo's development would have been if there weren't people trying to kill it. But that's not ethical either.
No, I mean, it's like a Frankenstein's monster situation, where it's just like you've created something that it will only suffer. And that you know, now that you've created it.
On the other hand, I mean, I always think that it's, you know, interesting to talk about, like, what makes a human a human.
Mm.
Probably because we were kids at the time when they were cloning things initially.
Mm.
And it was in the news a lot.
It was in the news a lot.
And people were very head up about it. You know, oh, it shouldn't be. And I feel like now nobody really cares. Like, stuff gets cloned. And the robot, the really troubling robot that's been in the news lately, Sophia, have you met Sophia?
I have not.
You should watch some of the videos.
Oh, no.
It's a little disturbing. And, you know, AI, anything that's a bot online that can pass for a human.
Mm.
Can you teach a buffalo to be a human? If you trapped the buffalo in Chapman Morph, like, could you then teach it to be Chapman?
The scope of this book is, like, way...
Like, it has a lot of really interesting questions, but we just don't have the space for them.
No, well, because this is, like, a one-off car chase, like...
Yeah.
But also, like, I'm trying to imagine if this book were... Like, it's sort of like a David trilogy situation, where they try to do something that expands, like, their definition of the Animorphs and morphing and their fight...
I haven't read a trilogy about the buffalo. the buffalo human.
But ultimately, like, that thing becomes a liability, and then a decision has to be made about it. Like, it would be an excruciating three books about this buffalo. In a good way, I think.
Yeah, because, I mean, honestly, the original Animorphs did luck out in that none of them are sociopaths. Rachel maybe is. But none of them were to the extent that David, like, what he wanted to do. They lucked out in that none of their all of their core members agree that the target is banning the Earth from this invasion,
mm-hmm.
like, using this power responsibly.
Mm-hmm.
None of them went David. And obviously when we get to the future books where they create more Animorphs and that's, like, its own thing, and... Even though they're thinking about David and how that happened, like, once they make those choices, I feel like if someone had been like, okay, so we're going to do another David trilogy, but it's going to be with a non-human animal, and it's going to be flipped. Somebody probably suggested it, and they were like, we are not doing that? What is wrong with you?
I mean, I could understand that reaction, frankly.
Because, yeah, it's like, I mean, it's messed up.
Yeah. So what Animorphs book is next? Number 40 is called The Other, and it is narrated by Marco. He is morphing a bee on the cover.
I think this one is the gay Andalites.
I don't remember the gay Andalites.
No, you do. They're like, they live in a really nice house. It sounds like I'm making this up, but I'm not. Marco, like, remarks on how nice it is, like, their appliances and stuff.
I don't remember this at all.
And, like, one of them has some kind of, like, a genetic disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And he, like, doesn't have
Sula's disease.
Tail, maybe? Or a tail blade?
You're very good at this.
And, like, it can't be cured by, like, morphing for some reason. It's pretty interesting, and I'm sure I'll find it interesting as an adult.
Mm-hmm. One Andalite called Gafinilin. Estrif Valad suffers from a genetic disease called Sula's disease, while the other, Myrtle Iskar Elmond, is crippled, or a Vekel, as Axe puts it, missing half of his tail.
That's it. It's, like, divided between the two of them. They're both, like, kind of, like, outcasts.
Mm.
And I swear to you, it is, like, gay-coded to hell. Like, that is what we will find.
I am so excited for this now.
The other. It's even called The Other. Man.
So yeah, so thank you for hanging out with us and talking about The Hidden. And we will be back to talk about The Other soon. I don't know how else to end it.
I still have no idea what song you're going to use.
Oh, yeah. Full circle. Yeah. I have no idea.
Brother, you know you can't run away and hide. If you don't want to see her cry, is that why you won't go and say goodbye?